I'm John Schramm, and I apologize for my attire. I do actually own a suit. I'm not an undergraduate. I have a master's degree from University of Illinois. I worked as an epidemiologist at the Positive Care Center, which is an HIV clinic I'm going to talk about. Rock Health Fellow, I was a chair of the Health Advisory Committee for the city and a planning council member. And I currently work for Practice Fusion, which you guys are on. So that's who I am. I'm going to talk about patient-centered medical home coordination in a safety net hospital among adults living with HIV. I have no disclosures, except to say that I've only done this presentation in the shower. So this is my first time actually talking about this in clothes. Hennepin County Medical Center is a safety net hospital in Minneapolis. It is the premier safety net hospital in the state of Minnesota. They have about 350,000 annual encounters. About 20% of the patients at HCMC are born out of the U.S. Interpretive services speak 78 different languages in 10,000 different visits per month. While Minneapolis is about 80% white, HCMC tends to see about 35% of their patients that are white, 32 are African American, 19% are Latino. So all of this is just to say that HCMC as a whole serves a very diverse population, one that socioeconomic determinants of health really impacts. The Positive Care Center within that is the HIV clinic. It serves about 1,600 patients per month and 8,000 medical encounters. It's actually like 2 years old worth of data, so it's more than that now. They're Ryan White funded parts A, B, and C. And Ryan White, I'm sure everyone here is generally familiar with, but it provides funding for outpatient medical expenses and drugs. And in addition to that, it provides pretty much any kind of service that would be related to medical care. So the clinic provides case management, which will be important to discuss in a second. So when patient-centered medical homes became a thing in Minnesota, the Positive Care Center was one of the first clinics to be certified as a healthcare home or patient-centered medical home because of Ryan White, because that infrastructure was already there. They basically didn't have to do anything. Patient-centered medical homes, which we call healthcare homes in Minnesota, completely the same thing, passed in 2008. Again, I kind of assume everyone here is generally familiar with this concept, but the idea is that the patient should be at the center of their medical home, which would mean that all of your care from prevention to acute issues to chronic issues are dealt with in the clinic, and when you can't deal with an issue, there's a care coordinator who would actually help arrange for specialty care. In this case, in Positive Care's case, care coordinators are often the same as case managers for the more complex patients, so I'll probably use those terms interchangeably also. What's cool about the way Minnesota did it is they actually provide payment for the care coordination services. So they use a modified version of Johns Hopkins ACG tool. You can see it up here. You probably can't read it, which is my fault. I'm sorry. The general idea is if I'm an HIV patient, you would look through here. You'd see that infections are one of the categories. You'd ask yourself, is it chronic, severe, and requires care coordination, which are what the three columns are. If it meets all of those criteria, you get a check in the sort of right box, and we'll sum those up on the next page. If I'm an HIV patient and a hepatitis C patient, co-infected, because my HIV actually took that first line, and HCV is also an infection, I don't get an additional like credit for that HCV. So you can see that comorbidities that exist within the same general category don't really count for anything. So then you take all that, you sum it all up, and you get a tier. So in my case, or my example, if I'm HIV and HCV co-infected, that's one sort of system, that's tier one. The state of Minnesota estimates that I would take about 15 minutes of care coordination time per month, and they'll pay me about $10. Does that generally make sense? Okay. So you can probably see that this doesn't really work very well necessarily. A lot of the clinics anecdotally get angry because, there's not really... this doesn't really correlate with anything. So they would use this method because they have to get paid, and they developed some other internal method to do resource allocation. And moving beyond just anecdotal, you're looking at data, which I'll talk more about in a second. The x-axis, which again, I'm sorry, isn't labeled, is the tier of medical complexity, and the y-axis is a number of minutes per month, and there's basically no correlation between this. So that kind of provides a motivation for what we looked at. We want to figure out is there a better way to understand care coordination among people living with HIV? Cool. We did this by collecting data from the Positive Care Center that I already talked about, and we collected medical data from Epic, like viral load, some other markers for HIV, weight loss, and then the complexity tier that we just talked about. We collected social data from a system called Provide, which is where our case managers would document everything. And we also got utilization information, which provided the number of minutes per month that a patient would take. We did multivariate linear regression that was adjusted for stuff. And we did t-tests that I don't think I'm going to actually talk about. It's stuff. No. I'll hit on it. It's cool. We're all friends. 610 patients was what was in the total sample size. Of those, by the time we got through everything, about 587 of them were actually included in our study. On average, they were 141 minutes per month. You can see from this that we serve a lot of African-American and African-born, which are both categorized as black, unfortunately, in this population. You can see mostly men. That's largely because this is driven by MSM. And then the age distribution is pretty even, but obviously there's more 45 to 54-year-olds. And there's a pretty dramatic range in time that we spend care coordination. So what you're looking at now on the left is care coordination activity. So for about a year of the time, case managers would actually document what they were doing with the patient, like general categories. We didn't have enough data to actually use that in models later on, but you can see the majority of time that a case manager is with a patient, they're doing medical or insurance-related things. The other category is largely like legal issues or immigration issues. The medical complexity tier on the right is based on what the physician noted for the patient. There's a large unknown because it's kind of a burdensome activity to go through. And some of the patients we had from before they were enrolled. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. You're giving me nasty looks for it already. You'll notice that there's barely any tier zero because everyone should have HIV in this population, so they should at least be a tier one. And then it really tapers off. There's very few tier three and fours. So then we did linear regression, adjusted for age, sex, race, and viral load, or CD4 count. I think it's viral load in the model that you're looking at right now. The way that you can kind of interpret this is the estimate, because it's linear regression, the estimate is actually the number of minutes that this sort of added to the model. So you can, it gives you a pretty tangible idea for how these factors impact care coordination time. So being unemployed or disabled, which were the majority of our patients, actually increased the number of average minutes of month of care coordination time that a patient required by over half an hour. In poverty and uncontrolled weight loss for about 20 minutes each. Neither of those were statistically significant because I don't think we quite had the power, particularly with uncontrolled weight loss, to do that, but they were pretty close. Requiring an interpreter was almost an hour, and being more than 100 miles away from the clinic actually decreased the amount of time, and we think that's mostly because they received services somewhere else because they were so far away. So not that they actually didn't require services, we just don't have documentation of that. Not being literate was 40 minutes. That's kind of interesting. And then housing, being institutionally housed, was over an hour. So institutional in this case would be like being in jail or a psychiatric hospital. Homeless, for the similar reason that I talked about a second ago about distance from clinic, we think that they actually receive services through other means that are not documented, not that, you know, they do require more services. So what's kind of interesting then is the medical complexity tier, per level that they're in, increases it by about 12 minutes. And before people freak out that 40% of the data is missing, we actually used a model for this based on problem list diagnoses. So if anything, this would actually over-report because not all the things are chronic, severe, and require a care team. So the state of Minnesota, as I discussed early in the slides, says about 15 minutes per tier, and they're not actually that wrong. The only issue is that all the social variables add so much other time to things that this is really pales in comparison to requiring an interpreter or anything of that sort. So just in general, so what they currently do for for tiering and payments is not really correlated with actual care coordination utilization. And really the social variables, which is kind of the theme of every public health event I've ever been to, the social variables are more important than actually the medical issues that they face. Great. I'm going faster than when I'm in the shower. This is amazing. Limitations. This is HIV population. It's a fairly... this population, even within HIV patients, has a lot of issues that they're facing. So this isn't necessarily even generalizable to all HIV patients and certainly to the non-HIV population. We used billing data because case managers are required to report to the Ryan White in 15-minute increments. So that means that they also have to meet a minimum threshold to continue receiving payment. I don't think that they, knowing all the case managers, I don't think that they would lie about the times that they're spending. I think they legitimately are doing it, but this is a limitation to our study. And as I'm sure all of you are aware, social data tends to have varying quality levels. I think it's actually pretty good because we're required to report it for funding. I feel like there was something else I was going to say here, but oh well, c'est la vie. Scott, Sarah, and Kevin were great to work with there on the main team. Our funders, Rob, Rachel, and Murray, were also cool, Molly, and the case managers that I worked with were probably some of the coolest people I've ever seen in the world. So that's about all I got, and I am under time.
We have ample time for questions for John. Are there questions in the audience?
Can you just say again, what was the tool that you used to measure the care management activity?
Yeah, so Positive Care uses a tool called Provide. And Provide, it's based out of Wisconsin. It's actually just like one guy, Brett, basically, that runs it. It's kind of awesome. So they're able to track all of the... so it's early in the morning. I don't know what you want from me. so they're able to track everything from like housing status, like you saw, all the social variables, and they also do like minutes and what they're and any interaction that they have. So Epic is really difficult to be able to integrate this kind of social service stuff into, and Provide is. I don't actually work at Positive Care anymore. I'm sure they would be very endorsing of them also, so I'd encourage you to.
When you have a chart to show the systems here, minutes and payment, and the payment looks very low, and I was just wondering, and say, yeah, that's fine. I was just wondering if there was thinking that that.
Yeah, so the way the state did this, if I get it all right, I wasn't involved in the process, so I might screw this up. Is there anyone from Minnesota DHS here? Great. So so what they did, I think, is they estimated the amount of time that a physician would spend, and that's the 15 minutes doing that, and then they took what the physician would be paid. And I think that this is actually for Medicare and Medicaid patients, so about $60 an hour, which actually seems really low too, but and then they split it into the 15-minute increment. So it is based on something, but as you saw, even the, like, you know, in the case-managed patients in Ryan White, like, they're spending significantly more. $10 is, like, not worth it, really, but yeah. Did that answer your question? Sort of, not really.
Yeah, underneath, like, how it got there, I just wondered, are they going to do anything with it to try and increase the...
Yeah, so... Yeah, so they announced in August that they're revamping how they're going to do all this payment stuff. And we actually, this study was paid for by them because they were interested in some of these other factors. I don't think they're actually going to take any of the advice about social data being important, but they are looking into revamping how they do the payment. I don't know what that means, that they would actually increase the payment, though.
So a lot of those variables that you were talking about seem like they might also fall into poverty. Were all of those univariate comparisons? And if they were, did you ever do any model that looked at sort of the additive properties? So sort of what's the worst case scenario, and sort of what was the sort of max of time that your system really required to get some of those really tough patients good care coordination?
That's a really good question. So this is a multivariate model. Not that everyone else's questions were fine. This is a multivariate model. We looked at high utilizers, which is not quite what you're talking about, but we looked at the people that are in the like top 10%, and then tried to find what were the general characteristics of them, and found that they pretty similarly matched the stuff that we were seeing in here. We didn't get to what you're talking about, and that would be an interesting thing as we consider this for additional like study and publication, hopefully, maybe. Yeah, I think it's 30 patients, if I recall correctly. And it varies a little bit by the case manager, because some of them were part-time, and then we had one case manager who would do intakes, and so she would have like 200 patients, but they weren't like the real caseload for her. It was just, oh, that was the other limitation I was going to add, was that if someone didn't need case management services anymore, they're kicked off of it and sent to a lower level sort of care coordinator. So these are they really are the like sickest, most like disadvantaged of the. Cool. Thank you.